is Digital Marketer. Today, it's Carey Polis.
Hello, and welcome to the Digital Marketer podcast. I'm your host, Jenna Snavely, and I'm so happy to get to say the following words. In this episode, I sat down with Carey Polis, the digital director at Bon Appetit. If you've been living under a rock for the past decade or so, Bon Appetit is specifically a print magazine. And they've not only survived, they have thrived in the new digital landscape. Carey oversees the digital strategy across their social platforms like Instagram, where they have 3.3 million followers, their website, their email marketing, all their newsletters, and just like the team of nerds here at DM, the people of the internet are obsessed with their content and their internal experts who have basically become celebrities on YouTube. So stick around if you want to hear more and enjoy. Carey, hello. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm super stoked. Very excited to have you. Before we kind of get into some of the like strategy that you oversee at Bon Appetit, I'd love to just talk about where you come from, like where you got your start and how you grew in your role.
Sure. So I managed to carve this sort of digital meets food niche in the past. Let's see, I graduated from college 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I had my first job out of school working for a small website that reviewed gourmet food products. And I was the only other employee working out of someone's apartment on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. From there, I moved to another company that also did not have very many employees, but it was kind of like a Yelp.com, but not Yelp. It was way less successful than Yelp. And then the recession hit. So I moved to Italy for a year.
Oh, wow.
And actually got a master's degree in food culture and communication from this university called the University of Gastronomic Sciences.
Cool.
Which is a real school that studies food. I came back. I spent 3 years at the food section at the Huffington Post. And then I've been at Bon Appetit for 6 years. So I always wanted to do something in food and media. And I feel very lucky that I've figured out a way to do that, though I certainly didn't have a huge plan once I graduated from school on what that would look like.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like everyone that I see at Bon Appetit obviously has a background in food, but I mean, it's like real serious backgrounds in food. It's not just like, oh, I was a waiter.
Yeah. It's really interesting because when I was starting out in my career and I wanted to get into, you know, food in a professional way, but not necessarily from the side of working in restaurants or kitchens, my parents basically didn't understand that that was a job that you could do. And I think people kind of had that same conversation with their families when they wanted to break into this field. Now it's very much a thing where you see a lot of people wanting to get into food or food media or food-related video or food websites. But mm-hmm. I think the way that the staff at Bon Appetit came together was because people really were just obsessed with food in various ways. So you see people who've been hired here from all different parts of the industry, where some did take a professional route where they went to culinary school or they worked in kitchens. Other people have just been incredibly avid home cooks, but also very good writers. So they found a way to fuse that. Or you see people that, you know, we have an editor who came from Vanity Fair. We have someone that came from various other lifestyle publications, but just always really loved the food content the best when they were working on larger scale lifestyle or culture related media organizations. So yes, the background is there, but it's very much from a pure passion perspective, maybe more than just the professional background.
Yeah, and I feel like it makes so much sense and you're able to connect so much more with your customer. It reminds me a lot of Digital Marketer because we are marketers who love marketing, even if we're on the customer success team or the product mm-hmm. team or whatever. We're like really into it, nerding out about it. And it seems like everyone at Bon Appetit, just it's a culture that's shared. You guys really love food, and your customers are the kind of people who really love food.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of people on staff that don't spend all day talking about food. If there are people like that, they tend not to last very long at the organization because it's just not what inspires them. And same thing when we think about our readers or our podcast listeners or our viewers on our YouTube channel. Maybe they just view food as like something they're interested in, or they're casual cooks, but they know to go to us because we are kind of borderline obsessives.
Yeah. I love that. Borderline obsessive. That's a good way to put it. It's very kind. It's still kind. Yeah. So you guys have obviously had huge success in just the last couple of years with video content, with your YouTube, on your social media. I mean, I follow a meme appetit count. Yep. You guys don't run that, right?
No, we don't. They're two guys from London.
I love that. So like with all this success, has that actually translated into sales? Like, you know, a lot of people might think that just getting in all that awareness traffic is not going to do too much for sales. How has that changed?
Such a good question. So I'd say 10 years ago, before I was part of the brand, print advertising made up 95% of our revenue. Now we have a much more kind of split pie where revenue comes from print advertising, revenue comes from our website, revenue comes from our podcast, and revenue comes from video. So what has happened is it's really changed kind of who our audience is. The print magazine, as you can imagine, tends to be a bit of an older audience, whereas our YouTube viewers are much younger, even way younger than myself, completely different generation. So it does translate into revenue where now advertisers will approach us because they want to do, you know, a sponsored video program or something on the podcast, whereas we just didn't have all those platforms 10 years ago. So there was really kind of just one way you could go. So it's translated to a different kind of sales and a different way to do sales. And it's translated to a different way that we view our brand editorially as well.
Yeah. What have been some of your growing pains in that large spike of your audience?
Now everyone on staff just is more all the time.
Yeah.
bandwidth is a huge issue because we never have a shortage of creative ideas, but we don't always have the bandwidth or the ability to execute. We care a lot about quality. And so when you're producing a magazine, running a website, and have a YouTube channel, and have a really robust social media presence, it's hard to do everything at a really high level, but our standards are very high. And so what that translates to is a very hardworking staff who really tries to make everything work, but we just have too much ambition and not enough time.
Yeah, that's rough. I feel like there's kind of a similar thing because, like I said, we teach marketing. And so our marketing team is also the people in our videos and the people who help produce our content. And so you kind of have this like creator thing going on with people who have other jobs to do. They do actual other stuff. How do you kind of balance that?
I wish I had some kind of answer, and I don't. It's something that we spend a lot of time talking about in both like small and large settings. I think you see people kind of like myself, where I really started in a much more kind of like 100% creative role. And really now a lot of what I do is more strategy and operations to kind of allow others to do the great creative work that they do. Yeah, like we have a kind of good backbone of people that are there to help other people kind of make as many smart and good ideas and good copy and great video as possible. But you see people that just balance multiple skill sets in a way that is really challenging, where you do have to kind of switch your mindset between, okay, now I need to figure out like the answer to an operational issue that's been kind of like dragging the staff down, to them being like, okay, time to go to a brainstorm to talk about what's going in our April magazine. So you do have to just switch your focus and switch your headspace pretty constantly in our editorial roles here.
Yeah. And there's something you literally just said that was like, oh yeah, their product is their magazine. Like, you still have to make a freaking magazine.
What's so fascinating about that is people that find us through our YouTube channel or through our podcast don't always know that the reason we are Bon Appetit is because of a print product. Wow. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. We're happy to meet people where they are as long as they still get the same quality recipes, the same quality content. In some ways, we're a little bit platform agnostic as long as our standards are high, which I mentioned earlier. But it is interesting for something like, or someone like our editor-in-chief who's been doing this for a very long time, to now meet fans of the brand who have a completely different touch point than what he was familiar with years ago.
Mm, yeah. I mean, you said earlier the like type of person, kind of your avatar, the kind of person that you're connecting to has changed because of this, or you have more different ones?
Yeah, I think it's just, I think what you can see is you have the mom who's maybe received Bon Appetit for decades and uses the magazine to cook recipes. And then you have her child who watches the videos on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So we're much more of an intergenerational brand than we used to. It's just that people interact with us on different mediums.
Yeah. So lay out your site strategy, because obviously you're amassing lots of views across social and YouTube and stuff like that. So what is your strategy once you drive people to your site? What are you trying to get them to do?
We want people to stay on our site, basically, and interact with the content we do have there. So people come to our site through social, through YouTube, through Google search, and through our email newsletters. And once they come there, we want them to find what they're looking for. Hopefully that's a recipe that they're going to cook for dinner tonight, or it's an article that'll keep them entertained or interested in something going on in the food space. So for years, we've had this philosophy that although I am the digital director, we want you to have a nice offline life based on what you can find online. So if that means gathering people around the table, but that's because we gave you a really great chicken recipe, then we've done our job well.
Yeah. That's really wholesome. That's really cute.
I mean, but also if you want to click around and like, you know, go to as many pages as possible, I'm not going to be mad at that.
Yeah, right.
But then get offline. Yeah.
Do you find that now that you're so internally expert focused that the kind of content you used to create isn't hacking it anymore? Or?
Good question. I think that we have always relied on our test kitchen and our team of editors as kind of like authority figures, because we do bring on people that do know what they're talking about in the food space. I think over the 6 years I've been here, we just keep pushing ourselves harder in terms of what our content strategy is. So that means getting more ambitious writers, doing bigger stories, doing bigger packages. We don't really like to rest on our laurels because we don't want our readers to become bored with what we have. So we're always pushing ourselves, whether that's developing new recipes in the test kitchen or just thinking of more creative approaches to having people become better cooks or understanding kind of like the food space around them and how that interacts with politics, how that interacts with other lifestyle categories, things like that. We're always just scratching the surface.
Yeah. What's something that you're super excited about that you guys are working on right now?
We have a pretty great package coming in February next year, all about, well, I hope I'm not spoiling too much, but tacos, which, you know, you can write books and books about tacos and all the points that tacos touch. So I think that will be a really fun piece from a lot of different perspectives.
Cute. I love that. And that'll go across like
all platforms. Yeah.
Everything.
It'll be a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. What does it look like developing that strategy of how to send things out?
It's both fun and kind of headachey at the same time, where there's kind of a core team of us on editorial that'll work on lineups, people we want to write for us. Then we work with our art and photo team in terms of how we can design that on the website. What are we going to shoot? What are we going to get illustrated? Then we create timelines. We work with our social team. We work with the video team. It truly is kind of one of those all hands on deck moments where everyone on staff seems to have some role when we do these larger rollouts for something to work.
How long does it take from start to finish to get one of those rollouts planned and executed?
I would say for like some of our bigger packages of the year, 3 to 6 months. Wow. And I mean, that doesn't mean that's all we're spending all of our time on every minute, but they do take some kind of long-term planning for sure.
And so the ROI on that is subscriptions. Is that what you're looking for when you look at conversions?
I think it's a few things. It's not necessarily subscriptions because it's surprisingly hard to measure like, oh, people read this article and therefore they subscribe to the magazine. It's website traffic. It's social traffic. It's also just kind of like if it feels like an important brand moment, like if we feel like we put our stake in the ground and things. And certainly also it's advertiser buy-in. If we had sponsors for the package, if we were able to do something very cool digitally that we haven't done before. So a lot of the ROI isn't necessarily quantifiable, though we do run analytics. It's like, do we feel like we pushed ourselves creatively? Are we happy with the product that we made? Because we do feel like if it's something we're proud of, there is an effect to our audience as well.
Yeah. It's so interesting talking, you know, it just says from like a digital publisher perspective, it's such a different game now that it's kind of like almost so similar to other business models and marketing strategies, but like you're utilizing all those same aspects, but you're kind of not measuring your success in the same way.
Yeah. Success measurement is something that I spend a lot of time thinking about because I do work with an analyst very closely. I have goals I need to hit. I have website traffic numbers I need to hit. And I think data is incredibly valuable in terms of understanding how people interact with our website, what people respond to, how deep of a session are they doing on our website. But you have to also use a lot of just editorial point of view as an equal measure of success as well. So something that I reconcile is the numbers, the pure quantifiable things, and then the larger story where is our email inbox full of people saying how much they loved the package? Are we seeing a lot of social commentary about people wanting to read every single article of a 25 article package? You know, those kind of things we find valuable as well because it shows that we're connecting with our audience. Yeah. And that I do believe has an effect across sales, across marketing, et cetera.
Yeah. And would you go ahead and define package for anyone listening that might not understand those terms?
Yes. Sorry about that. I'd say a package is any sort of multi-component feature. So if it's on a given topic, like last year we did something called Red Sauce America, where we had about 50 pieces of content all about this theme of Red Sauce America, where it was in our magazine, it was on our website, we had social first moments, we had a podcast, we had a live podcast moment all devoted to it. So package is some kind of bigger lift moment that we really go deep on.
Okay, cool. So when you're developing the package, are these coming down from somewhere else? Like, we're going to do Red Sauce America, or is this a development that...
Usually we have a couple of brainstorming sessions with everyone present from the editorial team where we will discuss pitches. Everyone comes with pitches for the year. And there we kind of then go into smaller group sessions where we refine what's on our roadmap. From there, we'll have everything approved by our editor-in-chief and we'll take things to our business and sales team where we let them know what's coming. And so they'll let us know if they think they have a really good chance of selling things, less of a chance of selling things, or alternatively, they'll occasionally ask us things like, would you ever consider doing something on this topic? And we can say yes or no and have those kinds of conversations.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Let's kind of go into, you kind of have three arms. You have like your regular Bon Appetit, your healthy-ish, and basically, right?
Yes.
How does your strategy kind of differ when it comes to those?
I think that we're talking to three different kinds of eaters with all kind of one umbrella at stake. So we launched Healthy-ish because we felt like there was a white space between people that wanted to cook healthy food and food that was delicious.
Yeah.
There are clearly a lot of healthy eating sites out there. We felt like we had a really valuable perspective in showing that healthy food can taste really good and you're not really sacrificing flavor. This kind of notion of diet food doesn't mean that you're just cooking unseasoned chicken breast with like a side salad of plain lettuce. That's really depressing. So we felt that we had a lot of people in our test kitchen who eat incredibly healthy, even though they're cooking all day. And this was really something that we were uniquely positioned to weigh in on. So that's how Healthy-ish started. From there, it kind of has branched out to not only be about food, but also kind of be about food adjacent topics as well. So we touch on things like self-care, wellness, things like that. Still all goes back to food, but we have been able to kind of spread our wings a little bit farther than we would with just Bon Appetit.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that that has been difficult to like find a place for it, or has it just been really natural?
It's been natural. And I was actually the naysayer in the beginning where I was very clear that yes, we are launching Healthy-ish, but really this is not a wellness site. This is a food site. And then as we started dipping our toe into wellness content, people really liked it. So we kept doing it because we also had a lot of interest in that area. And it just remained something that worked for us and something that does feel like it makes sense on the healthy-ish vertical. So I was skeptical that our audience would want that kind of content, and I was completely proved wrong.
Yeah, that kind of leads me. Well, actually, I interrupted you.
I was just going to describe briefly, go for it. Kind of the other white space area we saw where a lot of the recipes we were developing, we really had the assumption that the people who were making Bon Appetit recipes had a fairly medium to high level of cooking know-how. We felt like we weren't serving the more beginner cook. So we launched basically as an attempt to reach more newbie people in the kitchen and got a really wonderful immediate response for that as well. Because the recipes on basically have step-by-step gifs or clips, you can really see each step in the cooking process. It's kind of like a virtual handhold. So you can cook as you're going along and really understand when we say, you know, brown the chicken, what does that actually look like? Or caramelize the onions. You can see how the onions change over time. So that's been a really, really fun project to work on. And also now see people who have been fans of basically for a couple of years willing to kind of try slightly, just slightly more challenging recipes because they now know and trust us.
That's awesome. That's a cool thing to see. Do you feature like testimonials and stuff like that?
We don't feature them outright. We'll occasionally feature, like we have comments on recipes so people can comment there. Mm-hmm. You'll certainly see things. We'll occasionally use those comments in like social media and things like that. Or you'll, you know, all our Instagram is a public page. So you see people responding saying like, I've cooked this immediately. And we'll share testimonials we do get via email or via social with our business and sales team in case it's useful information for them.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. It would be a lot to be like, you know, this person's life was changed because they made this like brown butter scallop recipe. I made that recently.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a Carla recipe. Mm-hmm. So are there any content efforts that y'all have put forth that have kind of failed or not gone well?
The answer is yes. Like, of course, not everything is successful.
I thought y'all were perfect.
Yeah. I mean, no, we've never made a single mistake ever, ever. I think that, yeah, sometimes you don't see recipes perform as well as you thought they would. Maybe the photo wasn't there. Maybe you just liked it a lot, but the readers didn't gravitate to it. So I think you've seen that. I think you see things that take off traffic-wise that you don't expect and others not do as well. If I knew how everything would perform on the internet, I think I could make millions, right?
Right.
Earlier we were talking about ROI. I also think like there's different ways to measure failure as well. Like, is it a failure if it's something you're really proud of, but not as many people clicked as you thought? You know, to an extent, sure. But if you still think it was good work, I'd like to say that wasn't totally wasted, especially for something like the internet where like you can re-promote things, you know, especially with something like a recipe. Maybe it didn't hit in 2018, but try it again in 2019 or change the recipe title, use the newsletter subject line in a different way. If there's something that we're really passionate about, I think we can find other ways to communicate that with our readers. But yes, of course, things have failed. Things fail all the time and things succeed all the time. I think that's why I like working in digital is it's pretty fast moving.
Yeah. And erasable. Deletable. Do you oversee email strategy?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that. What does communication look like? What does it look like to add in sponsored stuff? Do y'all have a newsletter? What are y'all about?
I love email strategy. I think it's just a really fun part of the job. We have 3 different email lists. We have our main Bon Appetit list that goes out daily. We then also have an email list for basically and a list for healthy-ish, both of which go 2 to 3 times a week. And then within that, there are, of course, marketing emails to try to have people subscribe to the magazine or occasionally other marketing emails about a specific sponsor as well. So I'm such a nerd about email lists. I think that newsletter acquisition is really interesting just in terms of how people sign up for our newsletters and what kind of keeps them going to want to sign up and want to click and want to open. We're having a really nice growth moment right now, which I think is both editorially and product fueled. We've done a few things just in terms of making multi-signups easier, where once people subscribe to one newsletter, we immediately ask them if they want to subscribe to others. It's not rocket science, but we just didn't have that capability before. So there's things like that that we're just getting a little bit more nimble on. And then I think we generally have a really strong newsletter product where not only do we just send out content from the site, but you get weekly exclusive letters, one from our editor-in-chief, one from our senior staff writer, who is hilarious, and one from our food director. And they really write nice personal notes about what they're cooking, what they're thinking about in the food world, what's going on kind of at the office water cooler, which we don't actually have a water cooler, more like the office Slack room.
Yeah.
But it does give people a look into what is going on in the Bon Appetit universe. So I think as a newsletter subscriber, you get a lot of value. First of all, the newsletter is totally free, but there you see acts, you see what we're publishing, and you also kind of get this like peek into what's going on.
Yeah. So if you had to kind of boil down newsletter success, you know, so what we're doing right now is digital marketer, you know, the purpose of our brand is to help grow and double people's businesses. So small to medium sized businesses, stuff like that. If you were to boil down newsletter success into a couple of things, what would you say are the most important?
I mean, one, open rates, right? Like that's just immediately, are people interested in what you are writing about in your subject line? Is that something that people are opening? I think if I had to choose between open rates and click rates, I almost feel like open rates is the key, because that means that they know your brand or they're intrigued by your subject line and they want to see more. And two, I'd say list size is the other kind of big thing that I find interesting, because depending how you're acquiring names, if it really is through a fairly organic model of people going to your website or hearing about your newsletter on your own platforms, that shows that people like your brand and that they want to know more about it. So I think seeing a healthy subscriber growth and not an unhealthy unsubscribe rate are kind of the two metrics that I really look at.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. You got to make sure that people aren't just staying on and not engaging at all with the things that you're doing. Yeah. Okay, cool. I mean, I feel like we've touched on so many different things. If you were to give advice to any kind of strategist in your same position or someone who wants to start maybe a small, you know, digital publishing company, like where should they start? How do they? Obviously, Bon Appetit is huge, but what are some things they can steal from y'all?
I think the most important thing is having a strong brand point of view for you to be able to establish what is on brand and what is off brand pretty quickly. No matter what you're selling or touting, or no matter what your mission is, you need to kind of understand what you stand for. I don't mean that in a like stay in your lane kind of thing. I mean it in a what do you care about? What are your non-negotiables? Because that's where everything stems through for us. Like I know that our non-negotiables are recipe quality, editorial quality, and general, like I'd say kind of like integrity over what we're writing and publishing about, so that people view us as an authority. If we lose that trust with our reader, with our viewer, with our listener, we don't have anything. So that's where kind of everything stems for us.
Yeah. It all starts with trust.
Yeah.
And borderline obsession.
And obsession. And just eating good food as much as possible.
Yeah. Would love to. Would love to. I'm really excited for that, like, taco package. Yeah.
Should have some fun recipes and some good stories as well.
Yeah. Well, Carrie, we're kind of getting to the end of the hour. Where can people find out more? What do you think they should be watching out for and seeing?
I'd say if you want to just see a little bit more about what we're about, between our Instagram page, which does often feature staff regrams, and our newsletter and our YouTube channel, that really should give a nice flavor of what we're about. And just want to shout out that we also have a merch store that we launched earlier this year. So if you really like Bon Appetit, maybe you want to buy a sweatshirt. There'll be more stuff coming all of next year. And that's another thing that we're super stoked on.
That's really exciting. That's awesome. The last question I ask everybody that comes on the podcast, this question: if you could go back in time and tell your 25-year-old self, or whoever you were when you were kind of started this journey, anything at all, what would you tell her?
Maybe it would be something about it's okay to take up space in a room and like never let your imposter syndrome overcome what your gut instincts are because they're probably pretty good.
I'm just going to let that sit because I feel like it's just something I needed to hear. I feel like there's a lot of people out there.
I don't know. I'm certainly not 25 anymore, but I think that's something I also need to tell myself too. It's like, yeah. Yes, taking up space is a good and important thing when you know that you have smart opinions. You should not be afraid of sharing them.
Yeah. I love that. And optional additional question. Do you have anything you'd like to say to Food & Wine magazine or Tasty?
Look, I want to say that all ships rise, right? If people are doing great work, like that's, I'm not worried about competition because the harder we push, like we're our own hardest critics. And I think the more great work out there, especially in the food space, like that should be inspiring, not a reason to bring each other down.
Aw, you're such a good person.
Or this is a public interview, you know, whatever.
Yeah, right. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today and giving us a little insight into what y'all do and how you do it.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, that was super fun. Well, to everyone that listened, thanks. And we'll see you same time, same place next week. Have a wonderful weekend. Bye.
Hey, DM listeners, if you're running a Black Friday or Cyber Monday special, listen up, because Digital Marketer just released our Canva Holiday Promo Pack. It includes almost 200 templates that you can use to make the graphics for all your upcoming holiday specials and 3 unique design themes for each holiday. The Promo Pack is usually $27, but you can get it today for free. Check the show notes for the link to download, or you can go directly to digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates. That's digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates.